Always great to hear that song on AM radio.
AM staple.
An AM staple.
Yeah. Almost magic.
My guests tonight at the big table and here on the download on WGN have been entertaining music fans in Chicago and around the world for decades. Actually, 25 years this last April. Local H came out of Chicago in the early 90s, hit the charts in the mid-90s with that monster hit, Bound for the Floor. Scott and company have produced 8 full-length albums, including the latest Hey Killer, which was released this spring. They just got done with a pretty long, exhaustive. Would you say exhaustive? I like the word exhaustive.
Exhaustive, exhausted.
Exhausted tour.
Yeah. Exhausting.
But they're back home, and they're going to perform a set, free set, at Threadless Warehouse in Chicago tomorrow. The show's open to the public. It will be streamed live by Threadless via Periscope. And then later archive. The show starts at 3:30 at the Threadless Warehouse over at 1260 West Madison Street. Scott Lucas, Ryan Harden, thanks so much for being guests on the download tonight.
Thanks for having us. This is quite a treat for us. Thank you.
It's a treat for me, geez, and for the WGN listeners to have you guys in here. So how was the tour?
I don't know about that.
How was the tour?
It was great. It was great. It's over, and that's kind of cool. So tomorrow will sort of be like just sort of a show to kind of like totally get all the steam out, I think.
When you guys, you know, it's interesting because you've had such a history of doing creative type shows. You know, you've done all sorts of fun, you know, local aid shows where there's passwords involved and there's other things. This is another one in that sort of history of doing a free show at Threadless Warehouse, which is not a music venue. It's a warehouse where they make the T-shirts.
Right. Yeah, those Threadless guys are really cool, and like if I wasn't in a band, I'd probably want to work there. So it's cool that, you know, it seems like a fun place to work. Yeah. I mean, I don't actually know if it is. I don't know what happens when we leave and they close the doors. I'm like, everybody, back to work.
You're gonna get a lot of people going, help me.
Yeah,
that's right.
Tomorrow. Yeah. So talk about the music, because the new record was produced by Steve Albini.
No, it wasn't.
It wasn't produced by him.
But it was recorded.
Recorded at Electrical Engineering.
At Steve Albini's place. I'm still afraid of Steve Albini. So
what do you mean?
You know, I mean, I respect the hell out of him, but I'm just afraid to make a record with him. At some point, I'm afraid that he'd turn around and go, you know, this record really sucks. So, I mean, I'd love to make a record with him someday, but I'm still 13 years old, you know, when it comes to that guy. But he was there.
He was there. Cool. Yeah, he was judging in the background.
He was judging in the background. He was like, let me get in and out of here. Right, yeah.
What made you work at that studio? What was it about going to electrical engineering and doing an album out of there?
It's a great studio. I mean, never mind just for Chicago, it's a great studio anywhere you go. And the drum room in there is epic. And, mm-hmm. and you know, we really wanted to get the drums out of there, you know?
Yeah, we really got a massive sound. Like, the ceiling is like 40 feet high, and, you know, it's just the two of us. You know, Scott's on the other side of this sliding glass door that has all, like, his amps and stuff in there. So, you know, we're face to face, and then Andy and Greg Norman were up in the control room, you know, looking down at us from the treehouse, and I don't know. We had a lot of fun making that record.
How important is it when you're looking for a studio space like that? Because you just said you know you're interested in the drum room. How important is it for a band with just the two of you guys to when the space that you actually record?
It's kind of important, and I've recorded in a lot of different spaces, and I've walked into places. I'm like, well, wow, this place is really small. It should be bigger, right? And you've gotten great sounds out of there. But you always kind of have this, you know, when you listen to When the Levee Breaks from Zeppelin, you hear that John Bonham sound, and you're just kind of like, oh, how'd they get that sound? And it was just this really tall room with ceilings really way high. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you kind of always want to be in a place like that. And that's what that B room in Electrical is like. It's great.
It's very comfortable. You just want that, whether it's a gigantic drum room or a small studio, you just want to be comfortable where you're recording and who you're recording with. So that's a big part for me.
Scott, you've had a lot of we mentioned 8 different full length records, but you've also had a number of lineup changes with Local H. You've gone small. You've had the 2-person arrangement. You've had the bigger band. Why go back to just the two of you instead of sort of recording with a lot of different instruments and people in the band?
Well, Local H has always been primarily a 2-piece band, and there was a little area like in the late 90s where we toured with another guitar player to play solos, but I played with a larger band in Scott Lucas and the Married Men. And by the way, hello Aaron Duggins, I know you're listening to. He listens to WGN 24 hours a day. I did a couple records with those guys. So, I mean, that was one thing. But, like, Local H has always been about trying to figure out how to make songs work with just the two of you. And I enjoy that. And it's fun. And I guess I don't really play well with others.
That's yeah. That's good to know. Why do you say that?
I don't know. I mean, because Local H started as a 4-piece, and then people just said, I'm out of here. The guitar player said, I don't need this. And then the bass player said, I don't want to do this. And I was like, all right, I'll do it.
I'll do it.
And that was pretty much it, yeah.
Well, I mean, music, I mean, it's interesting because there are a lot of solo acts that don't collaborate and just have sort of studio session musicians who come in and say, this is what I want you to play. And then mm-hmm. there's other bands that are sort of, this is a collaborative, organic experience.
Right.
We're all playing together. Yeah. What is it about sort of your sort of ethos and your philosophy in music that says you want to be just a smaller sort of unit?
Well, I can't do that. I can't walk up to somebody and say, play this and do that. And, you know, it just doesn't feel right to me. So, like, even when I play with a large band, they're like, what do you want me to play? I'm like, you play whatever you want. You know, I mean, these are the chords, and this is the notes, and this is where you should hit at this point. But I can't tell anybody what to do, and mm-hmm. it just doesn't feel right. So this way, where, you know, it's a 2-piece band, I don't have that thing where it's like, dude, play the bass like this, you know?
You're
there's
telling,
nobody to tell
you're
me.
Telling yourself that.
Yeah. So Ryan, you know, it's kind of like, well, why don't you play it? And it's like, all right, I will. So
Ryan, how do you feel about playing a 2-person band and the idea of collaborating with bandmates?
Well, I mean, it's definitely different. I've come from playing in, you know, a 3-piece or a 4-piece before. And, you know, when I first started playing with Scott, you really got to take away, like, the element, you know, where the drums usually follow the bass line or something. But I've always kind of primarily played with just guitar players anyway, so my fill mentality when I attack the drums, like, it's more of like following the guitar than the bass anyways. So I mean, as soon as I started playing with him, it kind of, you know, it took a second to feel each other out, but, you know, we both came from the same sort of place, you know.
It's that classic Van Halen brothers type of thing.
Exactly. Before you know it, we're playing Hot for Teacher.
That's right.
That's right.
Scott Lucas, Ryan Harding, Local H. They're going to be playing at Threadless, the warehouse in West Loop tomorrow. A daytime show, 3:30. It's free to the public. When we come back, take a quick break. We'll talk to you about 25 years here in Chicago playing music for your fans. Much more with Scott and Ryan and Local H. Stay with us. The Download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with the band Local H. Ryan Harding, Scott Lucas. Show tomorrow at Threadless Warehouse, which, like, you know, like you said, the history of you guys doing interesting shows. The Threadless Warehouse over at 12. It's the old FedEx warehouse at 1260 West Madison.
Yeah, it's right next to the Union Park.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
It's going to be all psyched for Pitchfork.
You're like, you could just sell it that way. You're the opening act for Pitchfork.
We are the Pitchfork kickoff party. Hear that, Pitchfork? We're coming for you.
25 years, you know, it's amazing to think that, I mean, you guys, when you hit the scene, I mean, you've been playing in Chicago for 25 years and you've had commercial success. Talk about the early days when Local H began, because it was a different band.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about sort of what you were trying to accomplish, what Local H, what you wanted the band to stand for.
You know, I mean, it was a 4-piece band, and our first show was in Whitewater, Wisconsin, at, like, it was some kind of college, some friends in high school were putting together shows, and you know, we were just like into bands like the Pixies and REM and Replacements and 7 Seconds, and those were the bands that we were really into. And so it was just kind of a mess of all those influences and playing covers from all those bands and things. And I mean, it wasn't until like we became a three-piece that we played this show at this punk show at this VFW hall in Waukegan that like everything kind of clicked, and it was like, oh yeah, this is exactly what we want to be. And people were like jumping all over each other, and we were on the second floor, and people were literally jumping out of the second floor window. And it was
when you know you got a good thing.
Oh,
right?
I was like, this is what I want everything to be. I want all shows to be like this for the rest of my life. And that was kind of like a huge turning point. And then from there, we started trying to play more shows in Chicago and stuff like that.
And when you guys started making a move into Chicago, that you'd say like early 90s, talk about getting in. I mean, the scene at that time, I mean, it's sort of now looking back, the alt-rock scene in Chicago is legendary for the 90s at a national level. Talk about, you know, becoming a part of that.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't really feel completely a part of it. We were from Zion, Illinois, and that was pretty much, we were kind of on the outside, and we started to be very proud of that, you know, like that we weren't scenesters. But you know, we loved, you know, Urge, and we loved Smashing Pumpkins, and we absolutely loved Red Red Meat, and that first, and Liz Phair was out, you know, I mean, there's so much great music, and Jesus Lizard was killing it, and Naked Raygun, and it's just like all these great bands, but we just weren't in the scene, you know. But we'd come and we'd shop at Reckless and bring the reader home and read about all of it. But
the old reader, the four section reader, as we love.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
I remember that well. Ryan, are you from Chicago?
No, I'm from Minneapolis originally, but I've lived in Chicago for like, I don't know, 6 years collectively. So
at that time,
I'm familiar
with
this.
Yeah,
area.
I mean, thinking of the local H of that time when it was sort of, you know, you joined the band just recently, like 2013. But yep. Were you familiar with the band when it was sort of coming up out of Chicago in the sort of mid 90s?
I mean, I definitely was familiar with the same bands that like came from there, and I remember, you know, buying my first local H CD when I was in like seventh grade. So I mean, you know, I was familiar with what they were doing.
That's when we put it on. I was in seventh grade.
So yeah.
It was called I Hate My Homework. It's like
I was like 11 and just pumping it on the boombox.
It was called Sorry Pa, forgot to take out the trash. Slapping it. You got it. All right, good.
So not, I mean, we're leading up to, you know, a time when you guys were able to really sort of take off and own the scene. And I remember sort of, I guess this would be the mid 90s now, when you sort of, you know, you guys were able to get some commercial success, get on the radio,
right.
Do major label, the whole right. thing. Talk about that.
Well, I mean, when we finally did move to Chicago, it was great. It was a lot of fun. And I really wanted to be a part of the scene. I mean, I just wanted to hang out with bands and talk about music and drink and like form cover bands with each other. And it was great. I mean, it was a lot of fun. But I mean, yeah, I mean, there's always something interesting happening in Chicago. And I don't mean to suggest that those were the golden days that was the golden age, because it wasn't. There's a lot of stuff that sucked.
Did you see, you know, being from Zion and moving to Chicago, did you see a lot of musicians doing the same thing? I mean, sort of based on the success of the Smashing Pumpkins and Urge Overkill and the bands that were, like you said, Red Red Meat.
Oh,
did
yeah.
it attract a ton of musicians sort of flocking to Chicago to try and ride that wave?
Well, it attracted a ton of people from labels coming to look for bands like that. And, you know, it's not like, you know, the Urge Overkill record was particularly successful, but it's a great record. But, you know, people still wanted to come and, you know, get their own Urge Overkill or whatever. But I think everybody was just looking for the next Nirvana, honestly. I mean, that's what everybody was looking for. So there was all these people coming and throwing insane amounts of money around, and that was fun. And as long as you sort of got it for what it was and didn't take it too seriously, that was fun. And we were fine with that. But we were also, like, we also found it really important to take our music seriously mm-hmm. and take what we did seriously and take our relationship to the people who listened to our music, like, super seriously. So there's a lot of fun to be had, but, you know, I mean...
Well, you guys had a tremendous following. I mean, you to the point now where it's a little bit cult following of Local H at the time even. So the record people that were coming, it was kind of a no-brainer to say, hey, we should probably look into signing these guys. We should move these guys to a bigger platform because of what they've attracted themselves in the area.
Well, I mean, we were able to, like, sort of branch out for a little while, but we were never really going to be the kind of band that was going to be huge, you know, and we were never going to be the kind of band that was going to be big for a long period of time. We'd be the band that, like, had a fluke single on the radio and would do fine for a while, and maybe we'd have a couple of other fluke songs on the radio, but for the most part, we were this band that sort of attracts this specific kind of person, and they're not all out there, you know, but the ones that do like us a lot, and I'm very grateful for that.
Well, you seem to be in the right place at the right time when it came to radio play, because at the time, even here in Chicago, Q101, there was this sort of movement to create almost brand and an identity to alternative rock. I mean, it became like the format. That was the new format, and it seemed to be right when you were putting out singles, especially Bound for the Floor, which is almost the anthem of that time for Q101. When I think of Q101, that's the first thing. Dun, 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 dun. Yeah. I mean, that's sort of like I felt like they were using him in promos. I mean, that became Local H was it.
I mean, that song wouldn't die. I mean, it really wouldn't. And in some ways, it also hung us, because, you know, people think that's all we have or that's all we are. And to some people, that's true. That is all we are. But yeah, I remember just this, we were ready to release the next single, and I was like, let's go, we're sick of this song, you know, and it wouldn't end, it wouldn't stop. And it was one of those silly problems to have, but...
But it is, it obviously, the way you talk about it, it wasn't silly. Something that, yeah, a good yeah. silly. But let's take a break, we'll break for news with Rob Martyr, we'll come back with Local H, Scott Lucas and Ryan Harding. Talking about their new music, the new record, Hey Killer, which they just toured. They just ended the tour, and they're going to be doing sort of a wrap-up show at Threadless Warehouse tomorrow, 3:30 at 1260 West Madison. It's a free show. It's the official, unofficial kickoff to Pitchfork.
Yeah. That's right. You're welcome, Pitchfork.
You're welcome. When we come back, we'll talk more about Local H here on The Download. Stay with us. You heard that we were great, but now you think we're lame. Since you saw the show last night, you hoped that we would rock and knock it up a notch. Rocking was nowhere in sight, and it's never good when it goes bad. No one likes to feel like they've been had, and it may be okay. So Download here on WGN. That's the music of Local H. Scott Lucas, Ryan Harding are in studio with me.
That dude sounds like he's 6 years old. What's wrong with that guy?
The band is going to be playing at Threadless Warehouse tomorrow, 1260 West Madison, a daytime show. Very rock and roll.
That's right.
Always coming up with something new, breaking territory.
That's what we're about.
3:30 at the Threadless Warehouse, 1260 West Madison Street in West Loop. Before the news, you're talking about your commercial success and how it not only is great for you guys, but it also was a little bit of a curse in the sense that that's what people wanted. I mean, they wanted that song. They wanted your hit song over and over and over. And I would assume, you know, not knowing your story that well, that it probably, I want to know what happened next for you guys. Were you guys finding a lot of pressure to come up with sort of music that was similar to appease sort of radio stations and commercial interests?
Well, we did what any smart person would do. We turned around and made a concept record about cats. So,
smooth.
You know, I mean,
smooth.
We're riding high. It's like, what do you do for an encore? We're going to call Roy Thomas Baker. We're going to make a concept record about kitty cats, and everything will be fine, right?
Right, right.
So, yeah, that you know, and it was during the period of all this bro music. So, you know, it was like a lot of Limp Bizkits and stuff like that.
Right.
So
metal. So making a very Cheap Trick power pop record did not really go over well with people.
Do you, I mean, but I mean, that's your artistic, I mean, at least you got to stay to what you wanted to do.
Yeah.
I mean, you weren't feeling like you had to go in and say, okay, we want more, do some rap rock.
No,
guys.
No. I mean, honestly, everyone loved what we were doing. We loved what we were doing. We thought it was a great record. And then when it came out, the record label got bought and fell apart. And that's something that I would have had no control over. And if we had made a crappy record to appease everybody, that still would have happened, mm-hmm. you know? So at least we made a record that we all thought was great, and I still think it's great. And, you know, what can I do?
Well, you know, you talk about the sort of record companies, especially in that time, I mean, being bought and sold and moved around, and then ultimately the record industry kind of imploded.
Right.
And here you guys are in 2015 together as a duo, you know, you and Ryan, making a new record. Talk about the differences between sort of making a record and distributing a record and marketing a record in, say, 2002 to now 2015.
I mean, nobody wants to buy or pay for music.
Right.
No. And I mean, that's the way it is. But you figured out, people have figured out ways to survive. And, you know, vinyl has come back. And I mean, plenty of bands do really well. It's not impossible. And I don't really know how it happens or why it happens. But it does. I mean, you get a lot of people complaining about the state of music now, and I feel like those are people that used to get tons of money for doing nothing at record labels.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so
interns and whatever else.
Well, no, the interns never got any money.
Yeah.
The interns were great. But I don't know. I don't really complain about it.
Well, you guys, I mean, you're working musicians. You just came off of making the record, you know, Hey Killer in April.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You guys have been touring nonstop. I mean, this is the end. Is that the success? I mean, is that the key to success, to be able to afford your rent, is to keep playing gigs and keep playing gigs?
I mean, we always did that.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way it always was. So that's not different.
I don't know what's different. You know, like you're saying, you get like iTunes and all these free music services that people can get songs off of. But I mean, at the end of the day, I think if you want to make money, it's, you know, you got to tour, you got to prove people you're out there. And the more and more you do it, I guess, you know, the more, I mean, you do it because you love it. You're not doing it because you're making a ton of money. But mm-hmm. I mean, at the same time, like one of the reasons why I was excited to join the band is like, I knew this band toured all the time. So it's like, you just got to keep going. You know, you can't really.
Well, I mean, you guys, I mean, you mentioned a little bit earlier about sort of moving to Chicago and what you want to do with the band. I mean, what's life like on tour for you guys? I mean, you sort of are sort of hard living kind of locally hard living
rock Castellos.
Band. Yeah. But I mean, you know, there's stories of you guys, you know, partying pretty hard. You've talked a lot about
those. Really? Are just those stories, are, yeah. Though.
But I mean, talk about what is life on tour
right.
like for you
all right.
now?
It's the two of us in a van, mm-hmm. and we wake up and we go, all right, where are we going to eat tacos or sandwiches from? And then we eat those tacos or sandwiches, and then we drive to the show, and then we sound check, and we go, all right, now where are we going to eat the tacos or sandwiches from for dinner?
And if we have enough time, we'll either go find a hotel or go see what's playing at the local show place.
And it's always bad.
Yeah.
And then
the hotel or the
show? Movie.
The movie
is always bad. Yeah. It's always Jurassic Park or something like that. It's nothing, or some stupid superhero movie. It's nothing mm-hmm. ever good. Although we saw that Blythe Danner movie.
And, yeah, I was just going to say that was the one that I remember liking the most. But usually there's just a window of time where you got like 3 hours and you're like, all right, let's just go see this, I guess.
It's never enough, and it's never
I heard that a lot. I had a friend who tours, who said they never get off the bus. Like, they're in a big band, and they're like, they show up. He's from Nashville, and they would play places like the Aragon. And right. I said, oh, my God, when you come to Chicago, like, what do you do? And he's like, nothing. We sit in the bus until they tell us to get off the bus. We play the show. We get back on the bus.
That doesn't seem to be a way to
it's pretty boring.
Live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, so you guys just try to explore, you know, given the boundary of how much time we have till set, you know.
That's it. And then, you know, just play the show and try to get as insane during the show as possible. And then...
Do you find yourself, as you guys get older, trying to change your habits a little bit? Like, you have a curfew, or like, are you...
What habits are we talking about?
You're talking about
Taco Bell, right? Yes. Yeah. We try to limit it to once a week.
Mm-hmm. And then if we occasionally get the after show pizza, that'll be the other knife in the side.
Sure.
Yeah. But...
Touring secrets with Local H here, right?
That's it.
That's it.
It's just trying to limit the Taco Bell and pizza that we
ingest.
There
you go. There you go. The secret to the success of Local H 25 years, limit the Taco Bell and the pizza.
Clean living, my man.
That's right. Scott Lucas and Ryan Harding are here. Local H are playing at the Threadless Warehouse tomorrow to sort of wrap up the tour for the record Hey Killer. When we come back, I want to talk about Chicago. A lot of bands from those days of 25 years, when we talk about Urge Overkill and some of the other bands that have had commercial success as a Chicago band, don't live here anymore. But you guys do, and we're going to talk about why you stay here in Chicago. Stay with us. It's a download. Chicago Rock and Roll. That's from the new record, Hey Killer, for Local H. In studio, Scott Lucas, Ryan Harding. So we talk about their show tomorrow at Threadless Records, or Threadless, not Records, HQ. Warehouse.
Threadless HQ. Nice. Yes.
1260 West Madison, the t-shirt company, the warehouse over there, which used to be a FedEx plant. So, yeah, just letting you guys know the history of that building.
That's a good history lesson.
That's all I got. In Chicago, I mean, you guys
tell us some
local
more stories.
H, yeah. I sound like my dad, like, oh, except he doesn't know what's in there.
Tell us about the river.
He said, hey, I used to know somebody lived in that building.
Tell us about the bricks in this building.
It's crisp and bright and shines.
I got a future in the architecture tour. So Chicago. So, you know, like I mentioned before, a lot of the bands that say they're Chicago bands, they don't live here anymore. They had commercial success and they go to the coasts, but they still will be remembered as a Chicago band. Local H, still here in Chicago. Why do you stay here?
It's a blues city,
that's a great question. Why do we still stay? I mean, this is going to sound corny, but I absolutely adore this city. I love it. And like when we come back and I come downtown to go to the film center a lot and see movies, and I just walk by here and I get that feeling, you know, and I look up and I love it, and then I turn the corner and I see Trump's name on that, and then it all goes away.
And then you want to bark.
And I want to get out of here. No, and then I send him a little text and like, Trump sucks, and then
then you just move on.
Hashtag.
That's very Chicago.
Trump, yeah, yes.
Dumb. You know, you guys have had a great relationship with the city of Chicago in the sense that you came here and you had success here that led to commercial success. But it was always sort of Local H from Chicago, and crowds have supported your music. I mean, talk about your relationship with the Chicago audience.
I don't know. I mean, maybe it's something like, you know, when I was growing up, we all had that relationship with Cheap Trick. And so, I mean, Cheap Trick sort of informed a lot of my attitudes about music and just humor and life and things like that. And maybe it's that. I mean, I don't want to presume to have an effect on anybody the way Cheap Trick had an effect on me. But you know, it did feel like Cheap Trick was our own, you know. And you know, maybe it's something like that. I don't know. I mean, it's weird for me to even try to unpack any of
well,
that
Ryan,
stuff.
I mean, you're sort of a you're from Minneapolis. You just you came to Chicago here in the last 6 years. What is it about this town that keeps you here?
Well, I mean, this city has always had a history on, you know, my family. My dad used to come here with his brothers and my grandma and grandpa when he was younger. So, I mean, like, I would hear stories about Chicago all the time. And then, you know, moving here in, like, 2008 and playing in a couple of different bands and just, like, taking it all in, really kind of, you know, working in restaurants and doing stuff like that. You take in all there is to have in such a busy metropolis, you know, but it has the same Midwestern feel that Minneapolis had, you know. It's not like you go to New York or LA and there's this whole other like edgy, you know, crust on it, you know. This city has, you know, a lot of good bands, you know, a lot of good food, a lot of good film history, a lot of good regular history to it. So, I mean, I don't know.
I mean, it was really important for me to work with Ryan because, you know, there was that Midwest thing. And Minneapolis and Chicago have always had sort of, you know, when you look at the music like Touch and Go and Minneapolis, Amphetamine Reptile. And so there's always been that sort of thing like with underground music between the two bands and with rock music and, you know, and the Replacements and Husker Du weren't that far removed from what was happening here with Naked Ray Gun. And so I knew he would get it. And I'd known him for 10 years. I mean, we've been touring together for years. It's not like we've only been touring for 2 years. Mm-hmm. So it was something where I was like, all right, he'll get it, and somebody from California might not get it.
Well, you know, you mentioned earlier about the 90s when record labels and everybody in between were sort of coming to Chicago to try to find the next Nirvana, to try to find the next Smashing Pumpkins, whatever it is. You know, for the city of Chicago's music scene, you know, it's transformed over the years.
Oh, yeah.
How is it now? I mean, in 2015, is it supportive? I mean, is it easy to sort of have commercial or is it easy to have success with an audience to have a following? And are sort of anybody who's sort of representing what's left of the music industry paying attention to what's happening here?
I'm sure there is. I mean, like, the punk scene in Chicago is great. And, like, the underground metal scene in Chicago is really great. I mean, not that they're both really great, but and then, you know, like the hip hop scene in Chicago is it's blowing up. So, I mean, I think there's plenty of stuff that's going on in Chicago and always will be going on in Chicago. I think people get fixated on one form of music and go, well, that's not happening anymore. But when you look at like all the other things that are going on, and like the indie scenes never stop and never will stop in Chicago. So when you look at all that stuff and all these people that have come from around here and are selling boatloads of records, I mean, it's still going to go on.
Do you guys, I mean, Scott, do you reflect at all? I mean, 25 years of being in this scene and also being local age, do you reflect on your successes and look back and say, what a career I've had as a Chicago musician?
No, I think that's dangerous. You know, I mean, we did it for a little bit at the beginning of this year, but nostalgia doesn't really interest me. What interests me is always like the next thing and moving forward like a shark.
Predators.
You know, you'll die. Right. So, I mean, it's important to move forward. You know, we're not really one of those bands who are into the idea of like, hey, let's trot out this old quote unquote classic record and play it from beginning to end. We'd fall asleep, and I think everyone else would too.
What's next for you guys? I mean, when you think of, you know, you're talking about moving forward, you're wrapping up this tour, which is really the sort of wrap up on this record. What after Threadless tomorrow? You got a couple of sort of scraggling gigs. Like, what's next for you two?
Trying to enjoy the summer.
Yeah, I mean, this
go see Metallica.
The city's just like one huge, you know, artery, and there's always something going through it. So, I mean, we're just paying attention to bands we like now and things that we want to do, and we're just going to keep moving forward.
I mean, we have some ideas about what to do with this next record, but I mean, we might be making a record sooner than
how does
we'd
it work
like.
For you guys? I mean, is it sort of like, hey, I got a collection of songs I'm thinking about. Do you guys get together and sort of plot out what the next year looks like? What's sort of like the planning process for Local Age?
That's usually what it is. Like, yeah. you start, you kind of like stop moving, and then you like look around and sort of like take things in, and then you like maybe an idea. You got to have something to say, and then once you start to realize that, all right, I've got something to say again, then you sort of formulate the record around that idea, and then you just keep looking and you keep paying attention and you keep taking things and sort of letting things come in and regurgitate, and then hopefully you got something.
And it's easier with two people because you're just bouncing it off of one mm-hmm. other guy rather than trying to coordinate schedules for two or three other people right. where you have to write.
That is true, yeah.
I mean, the majority of the last record was written just by us jamming, you know, so.
Yeah, I mean, and you got to just and riffs. Put the phone down, take the earbuds out of your ear, and pay attention to what's going on around you. And that's really the best way to do it, you know. I mean, there's stuff all over the place that you can take, but if you're staring at a screen and you've got a couple of things in your ears, you're never going to get it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You should name the next record Tacos and Sandwiches, right?
Our favorite foods.
Slippery when wet.
Wait, what?
That's after Tacos and Sandwiches. Okay.
He's thinking he's got a 5-year plan.
Yeah, he
does. That's post Sandwich.
Slippery.
It's Ryan Harding. That's Scott Lucas. That's the band Local H celebrating their 25th anniversary of playing music in Chicago. It's amazing. You have a show tomorrow, 3:30, rain or shine.
Early.
Threadless, early.
Is it going to rain?
Well, I didn't hear. Martyr said maybe, but.
Said no. Okay, good.
It's never going to rain. At Threadless headquarters, the warehouse over in the West Loop, 1260 West Madison. That's at 3:30 tomorrow. Local H, Ryan Scott. Appreciate you guys coming and being guests.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
A big deal for us. Thank you very much.